I'd like to open up with a moment of silence, followed by a serenity prayer. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things that cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. All right. We're going to get right into this meeting, and you know what our topic is. After the but, then what? At this time, I'd like to introduce Bree, be our first speaker.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm an addict named Bree.
Hey, Bree.
And I haven't often stood up in front of a bunch of people. I get my recovery going to meetings, and I go to meetings most every day. In the 8 years I've been coming to Narcotics Anonymous, I am quite sure that I've been to more than one meeting a day, and I get my peace hearing a lot of people, a lot of different people speak, because it always amazes me to hear someone else actually voice the insane shit I got going on inside my head. And I had a little bit of time to get extra crazy before this, because I've never stood in front of people at a convention and spoken, and it's you know, I kept thinking it's for the addict and blah blah blah, but then I was going, it's for your ego and blah blah, and you know, I start to argue with myself. Anyway, my sponsor said real early on, he said, after but, everything after but is bullshit. And that was a problem for me. For one thing, my initials are BS. And, you know, I've been spewing it since I was born, you know. And for another, I spent my whole life justifying, rationalizing, coming up with excuses, lies, and alibis for the stuff that I was always in. And that was trouble. I was born different than you all. I come from a different place than you do. I'm shorter than you are, maybe taller. Got a wrong sounding voice. My nose is too big. I'm cross-eyed. When I was young, I was always hyperactive. I was a hyperactive underachiever. It was impressive. You know? It was like bouncing off the ceiling when you all were sleeping, and you know, and then when you all were doing your work, I was kind of not there. In fact, I was usually put out in the hallway. The teachers always put me outside because I was a problem. I think that I was going through papers a little while ago, and I saw that, I think it was in the ninth grade, a teacher said that if Bree spent half as much time doing the work as he does, making excuses not to do the work, he would do very well in this class. And I realized that if I'd spent near as much time doing anything as I have for making excuses not to do things, I might have gotten a great lot done. What I have managed to do, what I did manage to do with my life for 30 years was get high and destroy every meaningful relationship I ever had, and break the hearts of the people who loved me. And, you know, as to after the buts, I don't have a but. I drug it along the bottom for so many years getting high that it fell off. And I haven't managed to grow it back after 8 years in recovery. Try. I was thinking that I would tell just one story, and that is that when I got in, I was one of those people, I held my pants up with a paper clip. I was down to about 100 pounds. I had full-blown AIDS. I had managed to I thought I'd get clean after my diagnosis, but instead I got control of a used pharmacy at an AIDS organization. They'd bring me shopping bags full of drugs. They were drugs people had to die to get, man. You know, I had just tons and tons of drug. And by the time I got here, I was reconciled to the idea that I was going to die addicted, that there was no way I could stop, because I'd tried to stop so many times. After my diagnosis, I'd tried to stop. They said I'd die if I kept using. They said I'd die anyway, and I, being rebellious, said, not me. But I came to the D.C. area to visit with my mother, who was living there. And before meeting with her for some lunch, I figured I'd best get right. And I pulled off into what looked like a secluded park, was doing my business, and got busted. I was 40 years old. Little apple-cheeked cop said, "What you doing there?" I was injecting drug. And I was facing jail time, and I was afraid. And I just run away from the nastiest relationship in my life back in New York. I had managed to marry a doctor despite having full-blown AIDS. And she used to write me these wonderful notes that I could show to a pharmacist, and they'd pass me drugs. But I think, as most of you probably know, one is too many. Never enough. I had access to an awful lot of potent narcotic analgesics, but it was never enough for me. And I always had to have control of the supply, so of course I was getting my stuff from the street when I was busted. And it was one of those strange things. I would tell you that you know, getting busted was the worst thing that ever happened. In my previous life, I would have, but really, it was the best thing. And when I needed to go into detox, or I was going to go to jail, and I was told by this counselor dude, he said, "Don't you worry about your morning dose. We'll take care of you. You just come to the hospital." And, you know, I was at the hospital, and it was like midday, and I was like, you know, pointing. I was, you know, making meaningful gestures. I was crying. I was snotting. I was shitting. It was a mess. I was a mess. I was dying. I was dying. I was terrified. And this guy, he's dead now. He just kept on kind of smiling, and he seemed to be the most uncaring person I'd ever met. I hated him. And his name was Scott. I didn't know then, but he was a member of our fellowship. He was my counselor, and he seemed like the most cold, supercilious, uncaring fuck I'd ever met in my whole life. You know, I'd be sitting there bleeding my arterial blood about how I had to get back to New York and this and that, and then my life, and he'd just smile and shake his head and, you know, say, "You just be patient, you keep staying here." I hated Scott. He was one of the people I really, really hated. And later, when I started going to meetings, and meetings were terrifying for me. I was always afraid of people, of so many different people. It was a terrifying thing. And there was this one guy at the meetings. His name was Richard, older guy, kind of like me. He was from New York. I'm from New York. He was Jewish. I'm part Jewish. He was a lot like me, but the guy was a prick. You know, I'd go to talk to him, and I'd be talking about blah, 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 New York, and he'd just turn his back and be talking to a woman. Or, you know, he never really paid any attention to me, and I felt so humiliated. I felt humiliated being an N.A. You know, you guys didn't recognize that I had the answers, you know. I really, when I first came in, man, I wanted to show you guys. I wanted to bring drug and show you that I had the best shit, you know? And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what, I was so afraid to go back to that hole that I dragged myself out of. but at the same time so afraid to become a member of a group, the enthusiasm, the slogans, the hugging, all of these things. But you don't understand. I'm from New York. We don't do that in New York. Get your hands off me. You know? And stop with the enthusiasm already. It was tough. So there was this guy, Richard, and I hated him. I really did. I really disliked this guy because he put me down all the time. He would say things like, when you have a little bit of clean time, you'll understand. And it was nasty. And you know, as I came to NA for a little while, I started to make friends. I chose people, it later turned out, I chose people who would have been fun at a cocktail party. I could have run with the people I met in early recovery. You know? I chose people who seemed cool to me. But this is the butt thing. Scott, my counselor, had been clean then for about 20 years in NA. And Richard, the guy I hated most, was his sponsee. And Richard's sponsee was a guy named Philip Kay. And Philip Kay is my sponsor today. Philip came up to me when I had 1 week clean and was shaking and stuttering and a complete mess, unable to sleep and hating myself like I'd never hated myself before. I didn't have any drugs to buffer it. And Philip was the one who said, call me every day. And Philip was the one who said, you know, who persuaded me not to go running back to New York. I wanted to go back to my life. I wanted to go back to my using. I kept saying, I'd say, Philip, I got to go back to New York and fix my stuff. I got to go back to New York and fix my stuff. I got to go back to New York and fix my stuff. And he was able to point out that I was talking about fixing my stuff. I had the doctor wife waiting for me. I had all of those things. And Philip, more than anyone else, was able to help me with the fact that I always said, but he was able to explain to me, and this is really hard today, that I'm doing the best I can. That when I can spend a day without absenting myself in some way, without getting high, that I'm being really successful, that I'm doing something that is unnatural for any addict. Staying clean is not a natural condition for me. And when I'm able to show up as I'm able to show up here today, man, if I do a lousy job, so what? I'm here. I showed up. And the fact is that since I ain't getting high today, I'm doing the best I can. This is some very, very weird stuff for a guy who used all his life to appreciate. I never did the best I could. There was always some extenuating circumstance. You know, I'm high. If I did well, I could have done a lot better if I hadn't been high. And if I messed it up. Well, I was high. What do you expect? You know, and it was always like that. There was always an excuse. I'm too short. My nose is too big. I'm cross-eyed. I still have so much trouble just being myself, you know, and I try the butt stuff all the time. Yesterday, I was trying to change the light bulb in my car. Can't do it. Can't do it. There are a lot of things that I am incapable of doing, and or maybe not incapable, but I don't do them yet. You know, I haven't learned. I haven't. I try, but I haven't. And, you know, what I like to resort to is what I always did, you know, talk real fast and make somebody else do it. You know, I'm really good at that. Anybody do that? I don't know how. You know? And then you have them do it, and then you say, and could you please wash the windows while you're at it? I've always been a scammer. But I'm not today. One of the things I'm able to do, rather than say but, and rather than tell myself that I'm a complete failure and incapable of living as you do, is I go to meetings and I hear you talk about the things that you can't do. Maybe 99.9% of you, including the women, can change a light bulb in a car. But maybe there are things you can't do. And I can do them. What I get from recovery so much is, as I learn about you and understand the things that you have trouble with, I get so much better at accepting myself and the things that I have trouble with. You know, I have always thought that I was incapable of living like everyone else, that I was too weird, that I was too stupid and too smart, that I was either it or shit. You know? And here, when I get to hear you talk my language, and I know that if you're here, you love drugs as I love drugs, that it's often so damned hard to be out in the light of day. What I get is the notion, and sometimes I get it all the way up in my heart, that I'm not different than you are. For me, after the but is love. After I stop making excuses and proving to myself and to you that I'm different and that I can't do it the way you do and that I deserve a little something extra, I deserve a little something, where's mine? After the but, there's love. After the but, there is the fact that I am an addict among addicts, among people who have shared the same miserable hell that I have shared. And that having shared that, we have something so deeply in common, so huge in common, that the differences stop meaning anything, that they don't signify at all. What signifies to me is that I love you, is that I don't want you ever to go back to that place that I came from. I lost everything. I shot drugs. I got Hep C. I had full-blown AIDS when I got here. My ticket was punched. I'd killed myself. But what I get now, after the but, what I get now is a chance for all that loss and all that destruction and despair, the pain that I caused my family. My father died of this disease. My mother is still killing herself with this disease. What I get is a chance to turn it all into gold. When I talk to you about where I've been, maybe it'll help you stay here after the but, in this place of love and care, compassion, all these anti-addict things, in this place of we instead of me, in this place of good, where we work together for good, when usually when I got together with you guys, I was planning to do something really nasty, like maybe a robbery, or how we could come up with an excuse for missing work, or where we could cop. You know, after the but, there's recovery. And of course, the most important part of that for me was finally admitting that drugs were the problem, that what I always thought were my only friends in the whole wide world, that drugs were the only place. Man, I was trying to be different than you guys. I'm sorry. I didn't have my band on. I always thought I needed drugs. And what I found in recovery after the but is that I need you. That the peace that I get from coming to meetings, from hearing your struggles, is a peace that I never got from drugs. The peace I got from drugs was a very isolated, alone kind of peaceful quiet. It was my little secret. It was like, you know, my fur-lined jockstrap. It was my thing. you know. But here it's a very public thing. The more I give of you, more I give of my life, the more honest and open and willing I am to try to get better with your help. The better the peace, the more open my heart, and the more love I get. And that's that for me. That's really it. That's what I'm here to talk about. I have gotten over my insanity enough to be in this 12-step program and to actually work the 12 steps. I find that each step is a psychic chiropractic to straighten my twisted thing. I know that I'm insane because every time I finish working a step, I'm like real happy and I'm ready to go, 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 go. And then it takes me like months to get on to the next step. You know? But I know I'm not alone. I know I'm not alone. Anyway, for me, the story about those two guys that I hated so much is that I hated them. My thinking said that these were my enemies. That, you know, one of them had kept me from getting my drugs and I almost died. And the other one was nasty and uncaring and insensitive to me. And yet these two guys, Scott and Richard, saved my life. They sent my sponsor into my life. And my sponsor, more than anyone else, because I called him every day and began to trust him and began to actually live according to spiritual principles, my sponsor saved my life. So, you know, after the but for me, a lot, is that my thinking and my judgment is flawed. And an awful lot of my reflexes and an awful lot of my first thoughts are to go back to using drugs. So, I'm really humbled and really proud to be here speaking to so many addicts. I used to really hate conventions. I thought the thug squads the hug squads were out to get me. And, you know, all the stuff we do here, all the enthusiastic stuff was really terrifying. I remember my first convention, I kept walking up the hall drinking more and more coffee. You know, I was drinking so much coffee, and I felt terribly alone. But now, after having been to a bunch of conventions, I know that this is the best magic in the world. Having this many addicts together, man, celebrating recovery. Anyway, thank you very much for letting me share. And
I want to thank Bree again for sharing and getting right on into to this meeting. I want to introduce Oliver. I'm a grateful recovering addict whose problem is named Oliver, and the solution is the program at Narcotics Anonymous. And I want to thank the ultimate authority for guiding us on a safe passage. We came from Providence, Rhode Island, early this morning. And, you know, I'm just really, humble today and enjoying this experience. But we were out to lunch and got a phone call, and I've learned never turn down Narcotics Anonymous. And the first thing I did is looked over my sponsor, and he just said, "Oh, here you go." I said, "It's not about the fear." He says, "Enjoy it, though. Enjoy what's been presented to you." And I was listening to Bree share here, and the first thing I did is look, because I asked the program, "What's the topic?" And he said, "After the but, then what?" And he told me the time. And I'm saying, "Oh, geez, my mind's running. I couldn't eat my lunch." You know, you get the stomach start growling and everything else, and I gave up my lunch. And but then he said one thing, this
two T's in that butt. Right? And I'm saying to myself, oh, geez, where am I going to go with this? And I had an opportunity, like, really, you know, get together my sponsor for the time being and share what's really going to go on. And then I had some prayers because, you know, I like to invite God in the process. I always invite God in this process because I've always had a God, but I always hated him. Okay, and if we're going to go back to how this topic here is, like, I was born, all right, and it goes way back. I was born with, you know, like scoliosis, you know, when your back arches and everything else. So when I was walking, my back and my ass would stick about this way, right? And I went to a parochial school, so, you know, you had a lot of enemies after that because it was always about some issue because it was always a tease, you know. You know, we tease everybody. You know, but when you get teased, it's a whole new solution, a whole new problem. You know, I'm gonna kick your ass. I'm gonna beat the shit out of you. All this, and this is in parochial school. You know, because that's how I grew up. Now, through that time, I said I'm gonna get myself straightened out, fix myself. You know, really get myself so I don't walk that way no more. But I'm gonna get back at society, right? Because I'm going to, like, fix myself up, look real good, you know, because now I'm going to go to and meet some women. Now, they want to touch me after the butt, then what? All right? So, I grew up spanking that butt. All right? I'm going to talk about, it's about conquering. It was about conquering. I had to have a woman at all times. Even with the Mormon, had to have another one. Once too many is thousands, never enough. I had them all lined up. Okay? We're talking about my experience and how I grew up and throughout before. Okay? We're talking about before the drugs took over. That was the disease of addiction. You know, getting settled, getting ready to take over. Okay? But I never see it coming because I thought that's how the life was supposed to be. You know, I lived in Boston, went to schools in Boston, graduated in Boston, went to college, did the whole nine yards, and partied like crazy from here to, you know, I had membership in New York, okay? And I had to have relationships there, you know? But when you have, after the butt, you got to go home. You got to go home, right? See, I'm going to come up with something that pretty soon is going to really identify what I'm talking about. Because, see, I was like, you know, think I was that player, right? Getting played. See, that's what we think. We're playing them when we're actually playing our own selves, right? So after the butt, I had to leave. Or she told me get out, right? One or the other, right? So I had to leave and then make another phone call. See, the disease of addiction, I'm not talking about the drugs right now, okay? I'm talking about a whole new a disease that even the addiction that when we come in here can manifest itself, all right? And it will manifest, and it can manifest itself in recovery, all right? I'm talking about, listen, before I even came to Narcotics Anonymous, that was taking place. So my life was growing and had to be all about the women. Just all women. Nothing else, nothing more. Alright? Eventually I found the woman of my dreams. Alright? I'll quote unquote on that one. She got knocked up in the park. And since I was being raised at the same time in a Catholic home, alright, that I had to do the right thing. You know what I'm saying, right? Like, got to get married, get a job, and get a house, and do the whole nine yards. Right? I was 21 years old. Okay, I'll do that. My father taught me well. That's the only thing he ever really taught me at the time, though. I didn't know nothing about anything else, but he gave me that idea, and it was planted in my head, and I followed through it. And guess what? Got married, got the house, got the car, got divorced. Right? She looked at it and said, after the butt, you got to go. I got somebody else. Simple. Told me you got to go, you got to go. And during that time, she had gotten herself pregnant by the man that she was seeing. Now, what I haven't told you is that I was in active addiction during that time. Active addiction in the house. I was driving down the streets using, you name it, highways, byways. I was traveling. I would travel to my job using, coming back using. You know, the insanity that comes with using drugs. Now, after she told me that she's pregnant, and I'm in active addiction, I'm moved to Rhode Island, I want to go back and take care of you. Take care of you and the kid. That's not my kid, but I'll take care of you. Because, see, I was so locked and loaded that I would do anything because I was not in the right state of mind. Because I want her. You know, I want to take you hostage. You know how we talk about in here? It's a hostage thing now. It's no longer a relationship. So I want to go back and take back what was rightfully mine. Because she had a big old ass. Right? She had a big old ass. I wanted that every day. And I only got it once every other month. Be for real here. You know? I don't know about y'all, but if I have to get it once every other month or every third month, or I'm going to wonder what's going on. I'm going to lose my mind. That's how I was. I want it. You know, addicts, we want it. I want it now. I come home. I work two jobs. I want it now. Take whatever you got off. Let's do it. Not tonight. It's not that time of the month. Not tonight. So I got to, you know, I'm watching a show. Always watching a show. I couldn't figure out why she didn't want me. Why she didn't want me. I thought I was a good person, but I, like I said, I was in active addiction. And she wasn't aware of it. She was not aware. But that relationship ended, thank God. Got into another relationship. You know, I was like, we as addicts, we will bounce and we'll, how we say, rebound. Right? First one that comes to that door, she's mine. Hold on, she got 30 days. That's all right. Oh, no, wait a minute, she got a couple of days clean. Wait a minute. Don't bother asking. You know, just say you're an addict, you'll be all right. Look, I'm talking about things I've done in the program Narcotics Anonymous. Just, you know, hey, listen, fellas and ladies, doesn't make a difference who it is. Whatever choice or sexual preference is yours, when she, he, or she walks by, or he walks by, and we look. You know, if you're saying you don't, then, you know, it's called denial. Right? And so I come, so now I get to Rhode Island. Well, I'm sorry, and I was in Mass. Met a beautiful woman, took care of my ass. I mean, literally took care of me. She knew I got into active addiction, did everything possible to help me. I'm talking about she gave up that butt every night just to keep me from leaving. You know how we disappear for not 1 week or a couple of days and month to 2 weeks later we come back thinking like everything's okay, right? So I thought everything was okay. She wasn't for that now. She got tired, and she got sick and tired. And she got sick and tired. How we talk about we be sick and tired? Look, we put a lot of people through a whole lot of shit. So what she decided to do is she get somebody else. And when you're in active addiction, everything goes. I mean, like the insanity that's associated with it, the pain that's associated with using, and you're not knowing how much pain you're facing. Believe me, you're going to go do something crazy. So I would skip work, find out, you know, the keys got taken away. You know, we don't get the keys after, what, 30, 90 days or something like that? Let's come back home. That's how it works. Y'all can identify with that one, right? So what happens is I end up like want to break down the window, break the door down, threaten the other person, not knowing who the person is, never seen the person. I threaten his ass to the point that he said, I got to go. This guy is crazy. And he ended up, because I want mine. I own it. It's my possession. That butt is mine. And there's no after. I still got to come back. Right? Now, all that took place. Then I tried the geographical cure. Came to Rhode Island. Did the same, even worse. You know, but sometimes, I haven't even mentioned what my drug of choice, but it really doesn't matter, but, you know, I'm going to say something. You know, when we smoke crack, right? Now, I don't know about anybody else, but my sex drive was way low. All right? I had a woman come up, and she was willing, I wanted her so bad, and she was willing to do everything she wanted to do, and anything, and everything goes, and she was like, damn, you've been smoking that long, that much? Hey, it was nothing. Not even Viagra could have kicked it up. Right? Oh, man. I tell you, sitting there talking about being embarrassed, right? With another addict who's in the same situation, really. It's like she just wants to get high. Well, let's fast forward to recovery. Because some of us will identify with this. You know, I got clean December 25th, 1999. I said, I got married. My wife was pregnant. My second child. My ass was, you know, in and out. In and out. Finally got to get tied. Get the fuck out. Got locked up. Came out. Don't want you. Got to go. Or you get some help. Well, obviously, we all know when we hit a bottom. So I hit the bottom nice and hard, if I may say so. I end up in treatment, in detox, to the treatment. And like I said, she was pregnant this time. And I had to drop everything, right? Everything, because there was no more. Like he was talking about, my ass was dragging. It dragged on the floor, but listen, I learned to pick it up and bring it with me. I didn't want to lose that part. Right? Hey, listen, I'm sorry. Some of my brothers get something. We got this going on. What I'm saying, right? So we get to a point where I get out of treatment. I get in this recovery process. It's beautiful. I got me a sponsor. I got me a home group. I got me a literature. I'm doing the step work. And guess what? Sometimes some of us, we get up here, we start sharing that good shit, right? And we're promoting instead of having the attraction come, right? I mean by promoting, because my sponsor told me, be careful. You might sound too good. You might think you sound too good. He said something about ego. You know, our heads blow up. You know, as soon as she walks by, you know, we got a whole new tone of voice. Oh, man, she's checking me out. Oh, I sound that damn good. I'm going to talk to her afterwards. All this. You know, because sometimes from what happens instead of sharing from the heart, I'm sharing from below the waist, right? Listen, we share, but, you know, doesn't make a difference. Now, I'm saying for us, a man, look, it happens to either sex. Don't make a difference. So if she's walking in, she's looking real good. Now, I'm trying to promote my message to her, not to the suffering addict who's in the seats. Alright? So my message was directed to only one person. You know, hoping that she can get it. Hoping that she can get it. Now, through all this process, I've learned that putting myself in that situation caused me great harm. And we're talking about in recovery. I want to say, it says right here, we accept responsibility for our problems, right? And see that we are equally responsible for our solutions. Right? We're talking about, like, I had to accept responsibility for going there. After the butt, then what? I got to go home to my wife. Right? Now, I have to go home to a loving, caring woman who's been with me for over 10 years. Hold on, do the math right. 14 years, okay, to the ups and downs. And have you ever, Have you ever been after that butt and then go home if you got a significant other and feel what it feels like inside your stomach when you're opening that door? Open that door and just say, hi, baby, everything's how was. That convention was beautiful. It was great. I brought you a t-shirt, a mug. Here, I brought you a gold chain. I'm broke, but it was beautiful. It's just for you. Right? Try to make, expose the outside, but you ain't willing to expose what's really going on the inside. You ain't willing to tell your wife or a significant other what's really going on. What happened in that convention? What happened when she called you? And her name is not Joanne. It's Joe. J-O-E. And if you got one too many Joes, she's number 4 or 5, whatever. You give them a number. Okay? Oh, Joe's on the phone for you. You know how we get the phones that the numbers, the names pop up? Oh, you know? I had to learn all these things that what am I really gaining if I want to grow in this program called Narcotics Anonymous? Do I want to grow or do I want to relapse in my addiction? And I ain't talking about the drugs yet. Because we can relapse. I said the addiction. I didn't say the drugs. You know what I'm saying? So I've learned that I had to go back and when my sponsee comes up to me and says, Oliver, how do I, you know, we're not supposed to give suggestions on a relationship. We guide him to the step work, okay? And then we talk about it. But some of my sponsors like to know more. But if I'm up here, give my sponsee some suggestions, and I'm doing the opposite, what am I really teaching them? Don't worry, you can spank that ass. Don't worry about it, you know. It's okay. You know, we'll share about it in the fourth step. You're only in your first. You haven't got, you know, don't worry. You haven't gotten your second step. There's no turmoil yet in it. You haven't got the second step because there's a, you know, we filled that void in the second step. You know, it's like, and I was talking about, like, when I was, all this shit was happening, I was on my second step and didn't know what the hell was hitting me. Because, you know, we go through the jewelry, the clothes, the cars, the shoes, the sneakers. I went through the whole thing and the sex was part of it too. Because it had to be part of there. Because I wasn't focused on the recovery piece. I was experiencing something that I wasn't experiencing at home. And I had to go through all this pain, this inside turmoil that, you know, I thank God that I have a sponsor that I can able to share with him exactly what's going on. And let him know what I was going through and how I cannot behave and act like that. If I want to be a man of God, I got to act like a man of God. It's not about coming to Narcotics Anonymous. It's not about coming to a convention and want to spank every ass that comes in here. Because she looks good, sounds good, smells good, and everything else about her is real good. Is it really good, though, for you? Is it really good? She can have double-digit clean time. You know? And listen, I've been there. Double-digit or more? Hey, I only got 2 years. It's okay. She's the one that's got to deal with it. It's not true. I'm the one that's got to feel it too. You know, you get caught up in that, you know, in feelings. Y'all know how it goes, feelings. We know we used over feelings. Well, I used over feelings in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, that's how I was feeling. I was feeling good. Wanting more. Wanting to feel real good. You know? But I saw myself going, stepping back, sharing good. You know how they say, living dirty. That's, to me, that's what it became. You know? And now let me tell you how I live today. And I'm talking about just for today itself, just for today. You know? My wife still there, still married. Cut out all the bullshit that's associated, all the pain that's totally unnecessary. You know, because we can add pain in recovery. You know, we have high tolerance for pain. You know, no matter what it is, it's shit. That's okay. I'll deal with it tomorrow. you know, but just for today, I'm okay. You know, we do that. We justify that shit. Don't worry, today's okay, tomorrow we'll fix it. I'll talk to my sponsor or, you know, but my sponsor always sees things. He's like, looks at me, you want to talk about it? You know, and you know, it's like, after getting this program, it's just like, you know how we say we could fuck up somebody's reservation to use? I can fuck up the my sponsor has a tendency to fuck up my reservation to want to use anything. And even if it's for a woman. Because I know the consequences involved with that. You know, my kids are at home. My wife, she knows where I'm at today. She knows I'm going back home to her. I'm not going to drop off my sponsor. He's my sponsor. And then I might be back Sunday night. Or it might be a long trip. No, I ain't doing none of those things. I go home. You know, I go home and take care of home because I've been taking care of me. You know, and God's been taking care of me. So as long as I keep on doing what's totally necessary in this program, I don't have to go back. I don't have to go back to that part of using, and I don't have to go back to the drugs. Because that disease is going to manifest itself and be, you know, it's like, look, this is a beautiful convention, my first time here. You know, and I want to thank y'all for welcoming me, really. And there's some beautiful women in here. But I've also learned, right, that the hug we give, is it for after the butt or is it a genuine, without a motive hug? Huh? Y'all can see my book has done some fucking work, obviously. You know, sponsor said read, highlight, do the whole nine shit. Okay, sponsor, got it. You know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes we have motives. We have motives. Well, like this, when I'm done, I have no problem. You know, we have motives. But I've learned when I said I have a God in my understanding, my life, okay, today, that I've done some step work that I can understand, I can feel, I ain't listen, I ain't touching, I don't want, no thank you very much, I don't care if you were walking on butt naked, no thank you. Don't want to create more harm or have to go back and do another. Fourth step, fifth step and sixth, put her in my eighth, and hopefully don't have to go back to the ninth and make an amends to her. Could we hurt those in Narcotics Anonymous too? You know? Can you go back to that person you hurt in Narcotics Anonymous that maybe had 30 days or a day clean or multiple years or clean time or whatever and make an amends to her for treating like shit? And I'm talking about me. I ain't talking about you. What you do, it is up to you. I had to go back and make amends to some women in Narcotics Anonymous just for even touching them the wrong way. And I'm talking about the hug. I ain't talking about like, you know, if she gives me a kiss. No, that's not what I'm talking about. For a long time, I wouldn't bring my wife to a convention, right? Like we don't bring our significant other, you know, a partner, whatever it is. We won't bring them because, you know, just that day. But my wife understands what I'm doing. You know, that I just came down here, who I'm associated with. I don't associate with someone that's like, if that's what you got to do on your own. I can't. For me, personally. Because I can get caught up in that. You know, we like that shit. You know, that drama shit. That little bit of drama. A little bit of drama turns into a low fucking soap opera that is going to extend for a long time. Next thing you know, she'd be like that Fatal Attraction shit. And you'd be, holy damn, what am I going to do? I know y'all, some of you get like phone calls ringing all middle of the night and shit. Oh, she got your number. Oh, boy, don't let her answer. Who the hell is this calling you? Oh, just another addict that's in pain. She was going through some shit, so she wanted to get it off her chest. So she called me in the middle of the night. I'll be right back. I got to go to Dunkin' Donuts and go, you know, bring her, you know, see if she's okay. But hold on. My wife's got... I've got 6 years, a little over 6 years clean. My wife got over more than that. And through the process of recovery, she understands through the 6 years that I thought you keep on saying men with men and women with women. Why is she calling you? Don't she have a sponsor? What the fuck is really going on? Huh? You know how your good sharing ass is that you can talk a mile a minute and then all of a sudden... Wait a minute. What are you trying to say here? You know how we became defensive and when we're using, all of a sudden we become defensive in recovery and we want to be defensive to our loved ones. Huh? Who is she? Where is she? Well, what is she? All the questions. But today, my wife knows all the numbers that's in my cell phone. Even if it is a woman, they all understand I'm in a relationship. Don't have no motives. I don't have no motives with you. This is where it stays. You want to call me and just say hi or how you doing? Because look, I had a lot of phone calls from a lot of women recently. As a matter of fact, Monday, I got into a head-on collision. With someone that came in a one-way street, highway. And I thank God. That's why I say I thank the ultimate authority for allowing me to be here. Come stand in front of you. You know what I'm saying? So those that's in recovery will call me. It doesn't make a difference to me right now, the sexes. Because they know. They know where I stand. Don't need to go there, and I'm not setting you up either. Okay, because I don't need you when you get some clean time and you got multiples and you get a phone call or all of a sudden you're in a group meeting and they ask you to speak and I'm going to raise you and talk about your ass. Y'all seen that shit happen. I'm a dirty motherfucker talking about he got clean time and shit. You should see how he acts when he gets out of here. And when that door, when he goes out that damn door, he ain't going home. He's making a detour. And it ain't by 7-Eleven. Huh? And talking about how good she did you and everything else. I've seen that drama. Don't want to be part of it. It'll be called all of a story. Shared by another addict. You know, who just got here. That I didn't allow her to get clean. Or get in the process of recovery. Because my self-centeredness said, work the bottom, don't worry about the rest. Work her, don't worry about anything else. Whatever she's going through, she'll call her sponsor when she gets one. Right now she ain't got one, so take advantage of it. You know? I mean, I'm just sitting here like... You know, when I come up here and I can... Or anywhere, and I can talk about like really... sharing my deepest or whatever's going on because I can free myself today. You know, I said it says in the literature that sharing takes a risk. It's taking a risk, right? But I will grow from this. I grow from every time, no matter what's going on. Now, there are some things I am not going to come in here in Narcotics Anonymous and tell you exactly all the deep down secrets, because that's the fourth step, and my sponsors don't know that's going to hear that. That, and then when I do my fifth, and that's God that's got me. You know? Because we don't know what we say it up in here. You think I'm being recorded. Whatever you say, we'll be used against you in a court of law. Y'all heard that one before, right? Shit. Imagine going home and say, hey, listen. At least just listen to your CD and shit. What the fuck were you talking about? Where did this shit come from? Wait a minute. Who's those? You know, I was like, oh man, oh, those people on the phone. Give me that damn phone. You know, man, it's like flip phone turned to be a single phone or two pieces. So I know what I'm saying in here. That listen, you don't have to. You can come here, enjoy the process of recovery, enjoy this life, but you don't have to go to the after the butt, because after the butt, there's feelings associated with it. And if you can't deal with the feelings, then don't go after the butt. You know, enjoy this. Enjoy this. You know, give out your number for a reason. Okay. Not for the pleasure of that reason behind it. You know, when you go in the hotel room, she don't need to know where you are. She just needs your number if she ever going through something. But maybe you want to direct her or direct him to someone associated that they can identify with, preferably the same sex. I only sponsor men, so don't go into that new step guide. I ain't even touching it. That was a sponsorship guide. Okay? I want to thank y'all for even allowing me to say something. And I pray that I can just help just that one addict that might have gone through the same thing or is going through the same thing. And I'm a grateful recovering addict. My name is Oliver.